Welcome to Canada Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2018, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation, taped at the Mill in Wilmington, focuses on the race for U.S. House, and we are joined by Democrat and incumbent Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to your audience for listening.
Well, first off, we ask everyone, why are you running for another term in U.S. House?
Well, first, I want to say how humbled and grateful I am to be representing Delaware right now in Congress. I think it's probably one of the most pivotal times in the history of our country, and to be able to represent a whole state and all parts of our state has been a real honor. I am running again because I believe our work is still yet to be finished. We still have a lot more to do on many issues, and I'm looking for the voters to send me back to Washington to represent all of Delaware.
So what should voters know about your qualifications for the job that perhaps they don't already know about you?
Well, I think many people might know or might not know that I've had the opportunity to serve in different capacities here in Delaware. Started off actually as an intern in the office of then Congressman Carper back in 1987. And so Congress was not something new to me in terms of the importance and the work ethic that is required. And so I worked my way up and able to serve in different capacities as our Deputy Secretary of Health and Social Services, Secretary of Labor, and Head of State Personnel, and also run a nonprofit. But one of my greatest exciting achievements is actually raising two children who went to Delaware Public Schools and graduated, and then graduated from college and are now great contributors to Delaware. So I think those are some things that people might not know that I think impact how I serve our state.
Many pundits and analysts have framed this midterm election as a referendum on President Trump. Specifically in some House races, we've seen some saying that the possibility of a democratically controlled House moving to impeach the president, making that kind of a campaign issue. So for you, is this election a referendum on President Trump and the possibility of impeachment, or at the very least maybe more congressional inquiry into the president through various committees if Democrats take control?
Well, I think there were a lot of things wrapped up into that one question. First of all, the reality is the House is going to change dramatically. Just the sheer number of retirements and changes mean that we're going to have a different Congress. And my first concern is, are people coming to Congress like me that really want to get things done, that, you know, feel that in order to solve the big problems that we have, we can't just be D's, R's, and I's. We've got to come together. So one is, you know, looking at what Congress will look like in the fall. It's going to be different. The second piece that you mentioned is impeachment. I think at this point it's premature. We have an investigation going on, and we need to let the investigation play out. And I think one of my big concerns is that we not impede that investigation. And so, you know, right now our focus needs to be winning the House in a strong way so that we can have those checks and balances that the American people want to see.
No matter what happens in the House in November, the atmosphere is likely to remain contentious. How will you work with colleagues from the other party to tackle these pressing issues that you're talking about?
You know, it's a great question because when I ran the first time, I really only focused on two major things. One was jobs and the economy. Mm-hmm. That was the what. And then the how was about bringing people together. And so in the first 20 months that I've been on this job, I've demonstrated that by actually signing a pledge of civility with my freshman class, which we expanded out to others, and spoke on the floor of the House on Valentine's Day about the fact that we're not going to agree on everything, but we can at least respect each other. Then I actually co-hosted events such as a Martin Luther King breakfast with John Lewis as our keynote speaker. I hosted a March Madness event, and I don't even really care about basketball that much. No offense, Dad, but I wanted us to again see each other as humans and trying to find common ground. And another event we co-hosted with two Republicans and another Democrat, Jamie Raskin and myself, was a night at the Holocaust Museum, where after a private tour, we then sat down in a room with no cameras, no staff, and just talked about immigration and how can we find common ground. So I've already in this first term, got many examples of bipartisan bills that I've co-sponsored, and I think that's the stuff that you don't see a lot on television, is the bipartisan work that really is happening, like us passing into law a career technical education bill. That's major for our employers and for those individuals seeking work. So I think the environment, I try to do what I learned here in Delaware, and I try to spread it in Washington.
Well, certainly there is a partisan divide on the $1.5 trillion tax cut enacted this past term. And polls consistently show less than half the country approves of it. What is your message to voters about the impact of these cuts to date and if they should remain in place?
You know, this is probably one of the biggest areas. We had a teletown hall meeting, and incredibly, 11,000 people joined our teletown hall meeting on the tax bill. And it ranged, you know, here in Delaware, from people who said, you know, this is working well for me, to many people who said it's not, that they maybe aren't even seeing the impact of it personally. You know, what I tell people is that this is bigger than a one-time refund. This is about a debt that we put not just on ourselves, but on our children and our grandchildren. And so it's incumbent upon us to sit down together and say, how do we continue to strengthen our business community and create an environment where they can thrive, but at the same time not put a burden of debt on us, and also potentially risk programs like Social Security and Medicare that may have to be cut because of this tax bill? So, you know, I think we need to go back to the table. And, you know, I think many of us agree on principles like simplification. We agree on principles, you know, that the burden should be shared. But this was not the right path. And I think that's why it's bearing itself out in the polls.
Building on that, generally speaking, how do you rate the health of the U.S. economy? And if elected, what are your priorities to make it stronger?
Well, you know, I think that back to kind of short-term, long-term, you know, part of my concern is the long-term and the growth that we see, that not be a spurt and then just peters out. I'm very much focused on the future of work. It's one of my main priorities, and some of it comes from my background at labor. Some of it comes from the fact that there are 6.7 million jobs that are unfilled right now and individuals who don't have the skills to match the jobs. So for me, I see us thinking about what are the barriers that prevent people from going to work, such as a prison record for a low-level nonviolent crime. We just introduced this week a bill, H.R. 6677, which is called the Clean Slate Act, and it's bipartisan. You've got the think tank on the left, the Center for American Progress, and the think tank on the right, Freedom Works with the Koch brothers, working with me on something that, again, helps individuals who are coming out of prison, helps the business community, and helps all of us as a society. So I think coming up with those win-win strategies, those things that we find common ground, and looking at where do we want to be as a country? We're not agrarian like we used to be. We still have strong farms. We're not industrial like we used to be. We still have some manufacturing. But where are we going for the future with artificial intelligence, machine learning, autonomous vehicles? That excites me, and that's something I think Democrats, Republicans, and Independents can get together and get around as a country.
You mentioned immigration earlier, and a Pew Research Center poll earlier this summer found immigration to be the top concern among voters heading into these midterms. The issue obviously touches on a number of topics, from the status of the DACA program and separation of families at the border to the funding of President Trump's border wall, which the president has threatened a government shutdown over. If elected, what approach toward immigration would you seek to pursue in Congress?
Well, I think what is interesting is that we're having this such a politicized debate when immigration historically has been a bipartisan issue. We just all experienced the passing of Senator John McCain, a true hero to our country. And, you know, it is people like John McCain who wanted us to have a comprehensive immigration plan. And I think that's where we need to be focused. We need to be looking at this in a comprehensive way, and we need to be recognizing the fact that our safety and security and our, you know, welcoming of people from other countries are not mutually exclusive. As a matter of fact, I talked to farmers. Immigration is important to them. I've talked to tech people this week. Immigration is important to them. I've talked to individuals down in Sussex County who come from the background of trying to serve people who are coming from different countries. It isn't, it shouldn't be either or. We're one country, and we're built on immigrants, people who were enslaved, and people who were native to this country. We can't go back. We shouldn't go back.
Healthcare was also high up on the list of voter concerns. Arguments in a Texas case that could strike down the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional will be heard this fall. If that suit succeeds, though, it would also eliminate popular ACA provisions, like protections for people with pre-existing conditions. With that possibility as a dropback, what do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing healthcare?
You know, I hear this as the biggest issue up and down our state. You know, I've heard it from small businesses. I've heard it from large businesses. I've heard it from my dental hygienist while she was in my mouth that her premiums are $440 a month. It, to me, is one of the most pressing issues. And while the Affordable Care Act needed fixes to it, no bill is perfect. We don't scrap this incredible landmark bill. And I think that's the part that concerns so many people. People with disabilities have come up to me and are concerned, you know, about pre-existing conditions. Parents who have children up to age 26 on their plans are concerned. And I think what we need to really be focused on are, what are those things that we can, again, come together on? For example, the cost of prescription drugs. I haven't heard anybody say that that's not something we should tackle. So I think, you know, as we go into the fall, this is the conversation. You know, there are two things to me that are huge and for our country. One is the healthcare issue, and the second is infrastructure. That's a potential opportunity. It's a win-win. It's jobs, it's building our roads, bridges, our infrastructure with our water. We have water issues in our state, and broadband internet. So to me, the issue of immigration, the issue of healthcare, and the issue of infrastructure are the areas we should be focusing as a country.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how would you address it if you're elected?
That's a great question. An issue that's not getting the attention. You know, I think an issue that is getting attention, but I don't feel we are really addressing it, is the divide that we have. Almost every, you know, group that I speak to, this question comes up. How are you able to even exist in that environment? Or people will say to me, I'm praying for you. I get a lot of I'm praying for you. And I take those prayers. But I feel that we as a country will not be able to deal with those big issues I just mentioned if we don't find the way to have courageous conversations about the challenges, because if we don't face something, we can't fix it. And so when I saw what happened in Charlottesville, that shook me to the core. And not that these things didn't exist, but it's now in our face. And then when I think about it, it's the courageous conversations, but it's also the coming together to do that real problem solving. Like, we didn't talk about gun violence, but that is an issue that's plaguing many communities and schools. We in Congress, one of the things we could do in our, I'm on the Education and Workforce Committee, we could be having hearings on that. We're not yet. And so I think there are areas that once we come together and have these conversations, and I know it's possible, I've been a part of these kinds of things. And so for those who think, you know, oh, that's not possible, it is possible. The fact that I'm sitting here today, I carry with me, many people know, a scarf, and it was a replica of the voter oath card that my great-great-great-grandfather signed with an X because he couldn't write his name. I'm the great-great-great-granddaughter of a slave from Georgia, and now today I'm the first woman and the first person of color to represent the first state. I know it's possible because I know what we're made of as a country. We just have to remember that. We just have to lean in and lean on each other and make it happen.
Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester, Democratic candidate for U.S. House, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You can find all of our candidate conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. This candidate conversation was taped at the Mill in Wilmington and is part of Delaware Debates 2018, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. Thank you for listening.